So, friends of the middleware, creators of sophisticated software solutions, welcome to the session about Service Bus, part of the Windows Azure platform. And we are here with two to present to you what we have in Service Bus. Abhishek is program manager on the Service Bus team. I'm technical lead on the Service Bus team. I'm responsible for setting strategy, technical strategy, and Abhishek is responsible for making sure that it all happens. So he's the driving force of realizing all the strategic thinking into actual deliverable, which is much harder than what I do. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that. ClemensV is my handle, and Abhishek R. Lal is Abhishek's handle, which is his complete name, even with the initial, which is astonishing. You're the only Indian guy whose full name I can remember. But you're, as I learned, you're from North India, so that's where that's more common.
Mostly.
Good. Well, I'm from Germany, so I also have a very uncommon name. Anyway, so we're here to talk about Service Bus. I'll talk about the what and the why, give you a number of scenarios why we think Service Bus is relevant and interesting for your solutions. Not only those where compute runs inside of Windows Azure, but also where you have where you have work that's being done somewhere in the world, and you need to go and connect that back to your workloads. We have a number of scenarios that we see in our customer environments, and actually some of the biggest solutions that we have running that are not even having the footprint sitting in Windows Azure, but they're simply using Service Bus as a means to connectivity. So we'll be talking about some of those scenarios. We're going to show you the SDKs and the tools. Abhishek is going to show you the new tooling that we have included in Visual Studio for Visual Studio 2010 and 12. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about security model. We're going to see brokered messaging, queues and topics. We're going to see relayed messaging, how you can expose a web service. We're going to talk about the pricing. And then, not mentioned in this overview, but we also have a number of slides about future things that we're currently working on. That comes towards the end of this talk, where we're going to talk about investments we're making around push notifications, something that we have announced and gave a brief glimpse on at Build. So we're going to give a brief update about where that's going. And we're also going to talk briefly or give a reference to the EAI and EDI features. And then also talk a little bit, give you a little bit of a glimpse of the new portal features that we're going to add for Service Bus. So let's start with the what and the why in this picture. The way you can think of Service Bus is a bus structure, a name in the network that you can hang certain entities, certain kinds of communication mechanisms off. So you're going to Service Bus, you're going through the portal, you're creating a namespace, and that namespace gives you this bus. And into this bus, you can now hook entities, you can hook queues, you can hook topics, and you can hook relays into those things. This is what we have today. And in the near future, you'll be able to hook notification topics in that, and also bridges, though bridges are for integration purposes. And once you have these entities, some of which are buffered, a queue is a buffer that you send a message into, and then you can later get the message out of, or you have a pass-through, like a relay, where you have an active listener on one end, and then you can walk up to that thing and send a message or route that through the bus. So you have these connected to the bus are solutions or our devices, our things, and you'll be able to talk between those things using that bus structure. So when you go and look up the pattern of bus, you will find kind of a definition like this where you have a communication substrate, and you'll be able to plug those things in, hence the name. That's what we call the Service Bus. There's a grand range of scenarios that we hear from customers. And when we started this effort as early as 2006, so the first version of Service Bus came out in May 2006 as a pre-release version, we had kind of hoped that this would happen. and we're actually seeing it happen right now, so that we don't no longer need to make up those scenarios, but they're actually, all of these scenarios are things that customers are bringing to us. So let's talk through some of those. I'm starting up in the corner, household appliance. We see a number of industrial commercial customers who are coming to us and say, hey, I'm building a laundry machine, or building a dryer, or I'm building a dishwasher. And I want to do predictive failure analysis for my high-end machines. Or I want to give you some amount of control over those machines. So let's say you have the laundry machine loaded, and you want to be, it's there, but you don't have enough time to run it. And now you want to run it, so before you come home to take the laundry out fresh into the dryer, you can turn that thing on when you're on the road. That would be nice. A lot of ladies would like that, or husbands who are in the house, obviously. And it would be nice if you could do that with the push of the button. Also, you want to have statistics of how much has this been run, so you can actually do predictive failure analysis of how long does it take until this particular device will break, and then do proactive customer service. So these are things that people are planning right now. So how do you collect all that data? Because these devices are built in the hundreds of thousands. So how do you hook those things up? So people are coming to us and say, hey, can we connect those things for service bus? And so that's a kind of project we're working on right now, where you'll be able to have on a topic inside a service bus a number of subscriptions. You have a subscription per device, and that's how we can send it messages, and we have queues how you can get that data in. And with the access control service that we have, we can give each of those devices a dedicated identity so that it can go and talk to us. And the only thing you need for that is network connectivity, where by now the Wi-Fi connectivity has gotten so widespread in every household, with a number of households not even knowing that they have Wi-Fi. That's because you get a Wi-Fi router if you just get the phone service these days, that there's a push button pairing with the Wi-Fi device, and your device is in the house, and that's very easy to set up. So by now, it becomes commercially viable to go and connect those devices up. So that's one thing we see. Another thing we see, let's go on the right side, the SaaS cloud service solution. We have a number of customers who are building specialized SaaS applications that are run in the clouds that have connectivity to on-premises systems. Connectivity in the form of talking to systems, I'm going to have a slide in a moment, that can't move to the cloud because the data that they hold is regulated or needs to be in on-premises for trust issues, or because it's legacy software that cannot easily be moved to the cloud. So we're seeing more and more people go into with SaaS solutions in the cloud and then have to go and bridge down to not only a single environment, where a VPN is a good solution, but actually multiple environments, as you'll see on the next slide. And then you have a big trend that we see, also something I'll have in that scenario, is connecting to phones and tablets and also PCs that are mobile. More and more, because of the diversification of the mobile space, because we have effectively three lines of operating systems, there's Windows in the Windows desktop and tablet and phone incarnations, and then there's Android, and then there's iOS and OS X as really the big families. Because of that diversification, it's not so easy anymore to just have a integrated solution with where you have a VPN and have that all set up. But a lot of the applications that you need to ship out for mobile devices are now kind of VPN-less, and they need to have a way to go and access the on-premises assets without relying on VPN technology, because managing that is all very difficult. So we see more and more cases where customers or ISVs come to us and say, hey, we need help with that connectivity because we need to go and reach into those places. So here's a scenario, and this scenario is very closely aligned with two or three customer scenarios that we have. One of them is a case study that we have on the Windows Azure website The customer's name is LexisNexis, and they are building software for lawyers, for attorneys. I'm taking a fictitious scenario that leans on LexisNexis, and that is Litware, a text-advised mobility gateway, but it's fairly closely related. So Litware is one of our Contosos and Fabricams, and but I chose Litware because I think you're all tired of Contoso. Is that right? Yes. So Litware builds a wonderful tax advisor application. That tax advisor application lives on a tablet or lives on a phone. And it has all the libraries and all the information that's needed for when you go out to the client and you go and talk to the client, you have everything in one view. You also get access to the files of the client, of the data of the client, but in this day and age, you no longer want to have that data on the tablet itself, because that's all very sensitive. What happens when you lose that tablet? Because then it might be, you know, it's difficult to get onto that data, but once they are in possession of the device, that's getting difficult. So we're seeing that quite often. We're seeing that in the medical space, actual solutions. So Litware is a case we can talk about that's in the legal space. We have solutions in the medical space where we can't talk about them, where the customers are not giving us the okay to talk about those, but the scenarios are very similar, where you have on the bottom doctor's offices, legal offices, here tax advisor's offices, where the data sits. And the data needs to sit there because of legal requirements. And now you need to go and effectively reach into those places and do data queries. So the way you query from this SaaS gateway, which sits in the cloud and is built specifically to support these mobile clients, you walk into kind of an adapter that sits on premises, you take a big chunk of data, you lift that up into the gateway where it gets cached, and then it gets shredded so you can talk to it from the mobile device. And then as soon as the mobile device, as the application closes, that data no longer is there. It's always just the memory, never is persisted anywhere on the device. If the tax advisor's office, the application that runs there because they have a line of business app, now has a notification that's related to a certain case that the tax advisor is responsible for, it can send a message. It can use the topics to actually go and send data, information to all the tax advisors who work in that office so that the subscriptions on the topics function as a mailbox for the application or for the user so that the data can then be fetched. We'll be able to finally connect this if you look at the blue arrow. The blue arrow is a notification path that you will see when you are building Windows 8 applications and you're looking at the push notification features, or if you're building iOS applications today, you also notice the way the multitasking works in these worlds is that your application is dormant, right? It's hibernated or tombstoned. So the application can't do anything if something happens on the outside world. So what you need to do is you need to tell the shell, hey, give the user a visual cue in form of a live tile or in form of a toast, to open up the application so the application can actually get the data. What we'll be able to do is you take that message that you sent into that topic, you'll be able to route that in the same form into a notification topic, as we'll name them, and then we'll be able to push that into the shell so that this message can actually wake up the user. So we're going to talk about that as well. So there's a number of capabilities here that are kind of in those scenarios where we have both a publish-subscribe scenario where we can target a machine, where we can target a user, where people want to send data to a user or a device in an asynchronous fashion, and a synchronous scenario where you can go from a cloud solution that creates this gateway into solutions that are sitting on premises behind firewalls and NATs. And to show you some of this, I'm going to switch over to my machine, which is number 2, and we'll show you the relayed messaging pieces first, quickly, before we get into the juicier bits with the messaging capabilities with queues and topics. So what I have here is a demo that I usually show. It's a very simple HTTP GET service that's running through the relay. It's nothing too exciting of a service. So I have a WCF service. I have this address. Let's go in before we hit this. Let's go in what this does. It is a normal WCF contract, image contract. It has an operation contract, web get. So this is the WCF 3.5, since 3.5, the HTTP program model that we have. And there's a method called get image, and it returns a stream. The implementation of that is as you would expect. It loads an image from an image file, that's this image file here, and then returns that file as a stream as we load it. So it's a super easy service. The only noteworthy thing about this service is that instead of using the normal HTTP relay web HTTP binding that you would usually use in WCF, we have a special binding that we ship as part of the Microsoft.ServiceBus.dll, which you can get through NuGet or through the Windows Azure SDK, where you can go and install this, and then you can use this binding instead of the binding that comes with WCF. And the effect of that is the following. I can now go and take this URI. Whole Chrome. And I will get an image. Now, the noteworthy thing here is that if you were trying this from your own device, if you were hitting this URI, you would be able to actually get at that image as well. A few people here with iPads. Because what's happening here is I host this service on stage in this conference center. I haven't modified the network in any way. I haven't asked anybody any questions. What I'm doing here is I'm creating a listener from here, from stage in this network, that is projected out to service bus and that everybody from the outside world can come and hit. The same thing happens for the on-site services that are sitting somewhere in, you know, the doctor's office or in the law office. There's no modifications to the network. There's no modifications to the machine even. There's nothing you need to do specifically in those kinds of scenarios, in those kinds of environments, to just make that kind of connectivity work. You can host a service and you can reach into that service. It is secure because it only gets into that one endpoint because we're not allowing wholesale access to the machine, but just to that one endpoint. If you are in a tightly managed environment, we'll allow you to, where you have the outbound ports closed that we need, 9350 through 9353, we have a communication mode that allows us to get out on port 80. And in the near future, we're also going to have one that allows us to get out on HTTPS. But both of those are structured in a way that you can actually go and stop us from doing that if you wanted to. So if you have a tightly managed environment, you can actually shut this off. But in typical environments where we see those things, it just works like magic. And that's a great thing. To be able to take a normal WCF service and host it from anywhere is very useful. So another feature that we have here, so this was a normal, just a simple service. So one thing we've added recently in fall, doesn't seem so reason, does it, Abhishek? Is the ability to do failover and load balancing with Service Bus Relay. So here's an example of this. It's going to organize those things. So now I have three of these listeners, and they all listen on the same name. Exactly the same name here. So they go to the Echo service, all three of them. And now we have three senders. It's going to take about 15 minutes. There's a built-in pause, is there, right?
Yes. There were seven senders at this point, and all of them are load balanced across these three listeners.
Yes. So the load balancing here is completely automatic. If you go and create a listener on Service Bus, the Service Bus will give you that kind of load balancer. You can have up to 25 of these listeners listening on exactly the same name, and we will balance the sessions across them. So with HTTP, we're actually going to go and balance requests. With NetTCP, which this is using, we're balancing the sessions out. If I go and now, and you're seeing that there are sessions because of the coloring. So if I now go and nuke one of those, you will see the errors coming back here, and then the clients will simply go and recover their sessions, and then we'll hit the other clients. So automatic load balancing. With that also, you get kind of automatic failover if you're doing that for your own services. So if you have services that are sitting in the back of your data center or that are just, you know, sitting on a two-machine cluster server somewhere in the back room, you can expose both of those, and you get, of course, load balancing plus the failover capability here as well using the relay. So the relay will function as your load balancer in that case. I had to count because I was thinking that was number 8. So key capabilities here. We have one-way unicast and multicast. And we have a binding here also that allows you to send one-way messages to up to 25 senders. And with that, you get multicast to all those senders. We have NetTCP, what we just had. The NetTCP option also has a direct connect option. There's a connection mode on the binding that allows you to set hybrid, where we will try to negotiate a direct socket between two places. And we have HTTP with support for both RESTful, well, just HTTP, plain HTTP applications, and SOAP messaging using the extended bindings. And then we have endpoint protection with access control that I'm going to go and talk about in some more detail later. And what we have coming soon, which I'm not ready to talk about yet in detail, unfortunately, because we had a little bit of a delay there, is the IIS Hybrid Cloud Bridge. So the IIS Hybrid Cloud Bridge is something that we're going to use the name for later. So this is a very unusual situation, Abhishek, because we know how we want to name that thing in the end, but we don't have a code name yet.
That's true.
So this is an odd thing. So we have a big bucket of code that we want to give to all of you as soon as we can. However, we have nobody to do it, because we're loaded with all kinds of things. So this is a special thing. This is a special project where I will sit down. I will write most of the important parts of it, the complicated pieces. Then we're going to move that out to GitHub, and we'll say, whatever you need in terms of features, come help us. And we're going to build that wonderful thing. So what this is going to turn out as is, I'll give you a peek. This is going to make everybody freak out. At home, not here. Oh, wait, this is not my machine. This is my machine. So let me bring up IIS Manager. I'm going to show you a pre-release version of this thing. It's not going to look exactly the same way. There's also something you will have to deploy on the cloud side. But I'll just give you a peek, just to give you a feel for it. So in my sites, on a particular site, if I go and go here, there's the Service Bus Bridge, which you'll be able to open. And so you'll be able to effectively configure inside the IIS the parameters for the relay. So that's the IIS helper. So what you're seeing here is effectively the module that sits in IIS, how that's going to work. And what that will do is it will configure a service that sits in front of IIS and basically plays all the requests on IIS, and that hooks up to the relay. So with that, we'll be able to support the relay, all the relay functionality, on anything that runs in IIS. REST services built on Node, REST services built on PHP, SOAP services built on Java, whatever you can run in IIS, you'll be able to go and use through the relay with that kind of a proxy. So that's the functionality that we're working on right now, and that is the only piece that we have here which we're going to surface in form of an open source project that we're going to go and develop with you to actually get all the requirements right. Because this is such a dynamic space that we don't know that we can get this story right without help. So we want to get that story right, and that's what we are, what we're deciding to go and do that one on GitHub. The relay programming model itself, so the WebCF programming model, right, this was the IIS story that's coming. Until then, you have the WebCF programming model that you need to have WebCF for. It's not working with Web API, the IIS hosted version, another reason why we're going to do the IIS bridge. But in the WebCF programming model, you get effectively all the key bindings to WebCF in a symmetric fashion. The one that we prefer for everything that you do is net TCP relay binding. That's the best one. It's got the best throughput. It creates sessions. That's the thing you should always use if you're using the relay. And you only use the HTTP ones if you expect a non-Microsoft client, a client that can talk to using the service bus assemblies. Only then you would use the HTTP bindings. Otherwise, always use NetTCP. And then the special service bus bindings is something that we use internally mostly as utilities. And the one that's interesting here is the net event relay binding, which gives you multicast. But that one you should probably not use, or you probably don't want to use once you know how topics work. Just in general, how that works, quickly, we have a sender, or we have a receiver. The receiver hangs on the namespace, creates an outbound connection using port 9351 in this case. That's SSL protected. The sender comes in and makes a connection to one of the front-end nodes, makes a connection into this socket forwarder. Now, there's a park connection on one node, and there's the relay connection on the other node, so we need to go and rendezvous them. So what we do is we send a control message down that chute to the receiver into your firewall because there's an open connection. So we can go and write on an open connection. And then we tell that receiver to go and create a connection to that front-end node. And with that, we have now a clean socket between the two parties. And that's what they're going to talk about. And in the direct connect mode, this hybrid connection mode for NetTCP, we're actually trying to upgrade that to a completely direct connection. If you have two nodes that are sitting in the same network, we will connect them completely directly. If you have two nodes which are sitting behind relatively quiet NATs and firewalls, we'll also be able to connect them directly through a handshake that's also used by, for instance, Messenger if you are transferring files. So that's the general model for the relay. The relay also has no size limits on these NetTCP connections or the HTTP connections, so we support full streaming, and you can pump as much data as you like. And I have a solution that I built for my own house that allows me to stream even video through the relay. And now, Abhishek is going to show you a little bit about brokered messaging. Oh, wait. Now I need to go on 5. Here we go.
How are folks doing?
Good.
Nice.
Good.
So brokered messaging is any time where you have a broker sitting in the middle. Service bus is that broker. The two kinds of entities we support today are queues, a fairly familiar concept, message in, message out, first in, first out, and topic and subscriptions. Topic and subscriptions are the multicast kind of scenario, where you can have any number of subscribers, and they all get messages from a topic. But let me walk through some of the tooling, and as we go through, we'll see all the different features and how the tooling will help you use them. All I've done on this box is from WindowsAzure.com, gone to the Develop tab for .NET, and installed the tooling for both Visual Studio 12 or Visual Studio 2010, whichever is your preference. Once you have done that, and you launch Visual Studio, the first thing I want to draw your attention to is the Server Explorer. So notice here how you had compute and storage earlier. There are two new nodes which are now available. The first one is Windows Azure Service Bus, and the other one is Windows Azure Virtual Machines. So we'll talk about the Service Bus one here first. The first thing you'll do here is add a connection. What you're connecting to is your Service Bus namespace. Your Service Bus namespace is your sort of container for your entities in the cloud. For this one operation, I do need to go to the portal. And the way I will achieve that is right from here, windowsazure.com, click on the portal. Now, as you know, we announced a new portal, which there's been a lot of talks and sessions on, and they'll show you. Depending on what you did last time, whether you use the old portal or the new portal, that affinity will be set on your machine. So since I've been using the new portal, that's what it goes to. Service bus functionality right now is still available through the old portal. So I'm going to hover over the preview on top and say, take me to the previous portal. Now, depending how familiar you are with it, service bus is located in the node on the left. And once you are here, you are able to go create namespaces, modify them, do different operations. All I need to do here is I've already created a namespace. And I'm just going to pick up a key from there. So for my particular namespace, I can scroll down and grab the default key. And this I can copy over to my clipboard. Once I have this, I have enough information to go connect my Server Explorer to my namespace. And from that point on, I don't need to use the portal. So let's try that. Now, even when you go to add new connection, there's help available in all contexts. So we'll walk you step by step through all the process which I just showed you of how to create a namespace. So here I'm going to enter my namespace. And the key I just copied.
Yes.
So looks like I already created the connection right here. So here you can see I've got my several namespaces connected. Now these namespaces can live in different data centers. They can have different subscriptions and all that. All you have here is a direct connection to your namespace. When I expand that, you see queues and topics are the top level nodes which are visible. These are the two entities which I mentioned earlier. Let's start with queues. The operations I have available on the queues node is to create a new queue. Notice all the different commonly used properties, like whether you want duplicate detection, whether you want sessions, what's a lock duration for the queue. All of those are available to you right here to set. I'm going to choose the defaults, and you'll see my queue TechEd demo is now available. Now, on any existing queue, I can hit F4 and actually look at the properties of it. The properties are mostly what you created the queue with, except note here there's a message count. This actually will show you how many messages you have sitting in the queue. So the key concept here, which is different from the relay, is that it is a buffered queue. The queue will actually hold your messages.
Yeah, and it's something you need to create before you use it, which is also different from the relay, because with the relay, you can just show up at a name and just start listening to it.
Correct.
So that's a more ephemeral construct. That's also why it's not listed here, because you can just make them ad hoc. You don't have to pre-create them.
Correct. Now, with the queue created there, I can actually do some operations here. If you look here, I could delete the queue or actually go and send a test message. So I'm going to do that now. Let me bring up the properties window, and it just says a test message was sent. And now you'll notice the message count was refreshed to 1. So there's a message there which is now sitting. Now, and any time if I want to go take a look, I could receive a message. There, the message which I had sent has been received. And you'll see the message count update to 0. So this is sort of the simple operations which I can do with queues. Moving on to topics. Creating a new topic is the same. You'll notice that you have the same kind of options, like topic size. You know, how big do you want the container to be, how many messages, whether you want duplicate detection. You'll notice an interesting thing. It didn't let me create a topic with the same name as I had for the queue. And that's a very, very powerful concept of symmetry that we have between queues and topics. When you start on in an application, you might just need a queue. You want messages to go from A to B, one copy of a message. And then as the application evolves, sometimes you might need debugging scenarios or audit logs or something just to monitor what's going on in the application and maybe make a copy of that message which flowed through. And in that case, Service Bus allows you to replace, say, a queue with the same named topic, no API change, nothing in management changes, all the same, it's just an endpoint. The API remains the same to that endpoint. Sending a message to a queue is absolutely symmetric to sending a message to a topic. Same way, when you're receiving a message from a queue, you receive from a subscription. Now, I created a TechEd demo topic, which is now listed here. Let me look inside its subscriptions. I don't have any, which means right now, if you send any message to this topic, there's no place to receive it. I'm going to create a new subscription. Just call it audit. And notice here, all the receive side parameters are available. Things like whether you want to enable dead lettering, if there is an exception, or whether you want to have a delivery count or lock duration. These are the receive side parameters. They are all available on a subscription. And once I have created a subscription, now I can send a message to the topic, and I can go and check on my subscription, where it will show me message count as 1. So now any subscription on this topic will receive that message. I could create another subscription. And at this point, you'll notice its message count is 0. Because only messages sent after the creation of the subscription will receive its messages. So let me do that again of sending a test message. And now if I go both to the audit one, I'll see message count has become 1 again. And if I go to the next one, refresh it, we'll see a message count of 1. So here, very simply, you have seen how you can go manage your entities, test out your entities, and work with them just using Server Explorer.
And that's a brand new feature in 1.7 of the SDK that just came out.
In the June release right now.
Okay.
Now, one additional thing which we have here, which was not even available to you in the portal, is rules. Rules is a very developer scenario, not more an IT pro scenario, so we had never added it in the portal. But rules are what decides what messages you get in a subscription. Both the subscriptions I created here have the default rule, which is give me all the messages. But as you'll see, over time, you'll need topologies where you'll have probably properties on which, content-based routing, if you're familiar with any of those, where you'll create rules. And these rules will determine which messages show up in which subscriptions. So here's an example of a rule. I can say, give me high pri orders. And I can give a subscription message like, so now notice here, this SQL expression, which got created in the rule, will get evaluated for any subsequent message which is sent, and only those messages will show up here. So let's actually go use this. Now we know what topics, subscriptions are, and queues are. Let's actually go create a project and use this. If you're familiar with the cloud services templates, you can create a cloud service project. And what I'm going to do here is add a new role, which we have added in this SDK release, called a worker role with Service Bus Queue. I'm going to call it my order processing worker role. And this will give you all the bootstrapping needed to start writing code against the Service Bus API to go receive and process messages. Let's quickly walk through what the code does here. I'm going to scroll down, and I'm just going to start with onStart so it's very clear what happens. When this role comes up, it's going to check for a configuration string, a connection string. This is how it knows which namespace it goes to. Then it will check whether a queue exists, the queue name, whatever you've set your queue name to. And at that point, if it doesn't, it will create the queue and then create a queue client. Queue client is the object with which you will receive messages from. And that's all the onStart does. At that point, the worker role will go into the run loop, where it will call a receive operation on your queue client, client.receive. Notice there's no parameters here. What it generally means, no parameters, is we have a fixed timeout of 60 seconds, which means go make a call, wait for a minute, come back. You know, so your role remains you're not stuck there. You can do async programming. We have all async overloads available for all these operations.
You should use async programming.
Absolutely.
Yes.
This is just bootstrapping to get you started. And then when you see a message, all it is doing is printing out in traces and then calling message.complete. Message.complete is the peak lock mechanism where it says you get a message, you process it, and after you're done, you call complete. If you don't call complete on it in the lock duration, the message goes right back in the queue. But during the lock duration, no one else can see that message.
The reason for that mechanism is that you can go and take a message from out of the queue, process it, and if you crash during that time, that message will not be consumed. You won't lose it, but it actually is going to show back up at the cloud service after the lock expires. And then you indicate that you're done with your work by complete, and then only then we're removing it from the queue. So that's the peak lock mechanism. That's actually the default that we have. Right. The other option that we have is receive and delete, which has higher throughput because you don't have that extra round trip to do the complete. However, you're trading your higher throughput for less reliability.
That's right. Now, you can see the exception handling block is fairly simple. This was feedback which we got over the last months from a lot of developers that you're going to run into errors. You are going to see exceptions. How do we know what is safe to retry or what requires more action? So what we've done is to the messaging exception, we've added a property called is transient. And what is a transient error? A transient error is a network glitch. A transient error is that the gateway in between, your connection got broken down, be it on a network layer or maybe on a hardware failure or anything of that sort. So a transient error simply means you can go retry the operation. We are relied upon by a lot of consumers for stateful applications, which means that if a message is processed, it's transactional and it's absolutely done. And hence, there's very, very strong focus on not leading you down a path where you could retry errors or operations which could cause you to be in a bad state. And that's where is transient will be a simple usage.
That's new.
That's new. That's new in this SDK release.
Yep.
And that's about it. So let's give this a try. Now, before hitting F5, I should have updated my connection string, which is what will help me connect to my namespace. So I'll stop that. And we made it very, very easy for you to get that information. If you just click on properties here, you will see the connection string is the first thing exposed in the tooling. So I'm just going to copy my connection string and place it in my configuration file. This is your standard Azure configuration file. Where I have the value now, and I can hit F5. So what's going on now is we're running in the emulator. The worker role has been started. And this worker role will go and ping the particular queue and wait for messages to be sent. Right now, the queue was just freshly created. So let me go look at these queues. I don't see it here. I'm going to do a refresh. And I see my processing queue has shown up. And my worker role is now entered the run loop. To test this out, I can just do send a test message. And what should happen on the other end in very, very low latency is that message should be received and get processed here, as you see right here. I can just do another one. And again, you'll notice very low latency. The message will get processed in the worker role. So here's an example of an end-to-end project running. Now, to complete this scenario, what you need is a front-end role, an actual, say, a web application or something which would be sending operations. So I'll walk you through what process you might have to go through to connect your existing, say, MVC app. I have a simple MVC orders website. All it does is, let me start this up and show you what it does. If I hit F5 on the MVC website, it brings a order processing website called My Shopping Website. You enter some values. So I'm going to do 10 rocks, 10 papers, hit submit, and it submits the order. Right now, it could be using a direct call into a service, or it could be writing to a database, whatever be the choice which you have. Instead, what I'm going to do now is actually go and write these messages to a queue, put a queue in between my web role and worker role. The way I will achieve this is add a NuGet package to the role. I'll just search for Azure PubSub. And I'll, we moved down on the most downloads. You guys need to go download the package more often. and a couple of things happened here, just by adding the NuGet package. First and foremost, in the references, the latest SDK, the 1.7 version, got referenced. But in addition to that, in your web config, because this was a web project, we already added your connection string here. So all you have to do is go back and update this value with the same connection string that you needed for your worker role project. And with that now, I have connected to the same namespace my web role and my worker role. Now, what am I going to do about the messages themselves? A little bit of initialization here. In my class, I'll create a queue client. All of our client objects, queue client, topic client, subscription client, are thread safe, which means you can cache them. You can create them once and not have to worry about reinitializing or anything. In fact, they are resilient to network failures or any other errors. So if a gateway goes down, your network goes down, your machine comes back up, the queue client might give you an error, but you retry the operation, it will go back and make a connection to there. So you never need to recycle these objects. So in my initialization now, I'll initialize it with the processing queue. Notice I'm using just the same name that I had in my worker role.
And so this is now going to pick up the config.
This is now going to pick up the config, get all your namespace and credentials information, and just go connect to this queue. Once I actually have an order being submitted, which is right here, it becomes fairly simple for me to now create a brokered message. And I can just pass in the order object serialized right here into it. I'm also going to set a label on it. Let's say order total. And then from my queue client, do a send. Okay. Now this MVC project is going to be able to go and enqueue orders into the service bus queue. I'm going to quickly add it to Azure, where Azure allows you to create a deployment project for your MVC web app. And at this point, I should be able to run this scenario end to end. Now, when starting the Azure project, it will go launch both. It will launch the worker in the emulator, and it will go launch the web project in the browser. So let's see what's going on here. I can create another order here, hit submit, and the submission goes through, which means it went into the queue. And when I look at the emulator, I see the order just got processed.
That is wonderful. Abhishek, Thank you.
Thank you.
That is not bad to do a whole end-to-end story here in that short of time. Certainly testament to all the wonderful improvements that we've done in the SDK.
We'd love your feedback on the SDK. You saw a lot of different pieces. You saw template, server explorer, the connection string pattern. All of these should really make your programming very, very easy. So do give it a try, and we'd love to hear feedback.
So a few things. We're going to have a patterns talk on Thursday morning. Right. So no hard drinking on Wednesday, 8:30. We'll expect it to be here. But we're going to go through a bunch of patterns, but I'm going to give you a few basic patterns already, things to think about when you think about queues and topics. The first one is load leveling, or the first set is load leveling, load balancing, and offline and batching. If you put a queue in the middle between your clients and your backend processing, or between any two parties in the system, the first obvious benefit you get is load leveling, where if you have bursty traffic that comes up from the front and you have a receiver, a processor, and that processor shouldn't be exposed to that bursty traffic, well, putting a queue in the middle and putting a buffer in the middle is going to help with that. Also, it gives you very nice load balancing because now you're turning around the direction of message flow. Instead of HTTP, where effectively all the messages are being pushed on the receiver, on the processor now can go and walk up to the queue and just fetch messages as it has capacity. So you have a processing loop, and the processing loop does processing of a message, walks up to the queue, gets a job, does the job, and then goes back to the queue to get the next job. And you can run multiple of those, and you can never overload them. So whatever is in as excess jobs that cannot be currently processed is just being sitting in the queue. And obviously, also, when you have the receivers not available at the time, for whatever reason, there's no connectivity. That's one possibility. You might have to spun them down because you want to do the processing only once a day, or because the system is down for maintenance, also possible. Then you have the ability to go and just have that have the queue over there. We're managing that queue for you. We'll make sure that that queue is available, and the backend system doesn't need to be online. So that's a set of instant benefits you're getting if you put a queue in the middle, if you're using the queue that we have. If you use topics, what Abhishek has done and showed in the tooling, you get these multiple subscriptions on a single entity. So it's the same notion as a queue. You have a log that we send messages into, but you have multiple outs. So every subscription gets all the messages and have a number of subscriptions here. The default how we create those subscriptions is with a true filter. True means all messages are selected. And then you can go and do, this is what I show in the green, you can do range, you can effectively do range expressions. You can go and partition your traffic. Or you can have particular expressions that select particular kinds of messages out to the particular receiver. So you can achieve message distribution, broadcast, or you can have constrained message distribution, partitioning, or filtering of those messages out. What we generally recommend when we have deep customer engagements, customers come to us on campus or we're seeing them somewhere in the world, we typically tell them to use a topic instead of a queue. And use the queues really only as the higher throughput option. The queues are a little faster. So if you need to have that little edge, then use a queue. Otherwise, use a topic because it's just more useful. Because you can always go and add one of those taps. And if you need for auditing or for any other reason for diagnostics, if you just want to have insight into your message flow, you can always put a tap into your message flow. And so PubSub is actually the better solution for a lot of those cases. So you get nice decoupling of your modules. And you also have a way to go and effectively snoop into what's happening on the wire, what's happening on that transport stream. The messages that we're sending are what we call broker messages, and you saw Abhishek use a brokered message. The way I think about those is they're just key value pairs. And they also have a body, but that body is not so interesting, at least not for people who are embracing our primary API, which is the messaging API. If you use the WCF API, we have a binding for that. Have a picture in a moment. If you use that API, you're sending SOAP messages. So SOAP messages go into the body. But the the reason why we like the key value pair such is so much is because the operations you have in the subscriptions here operate on the properties. So they operate on those key value pairs, and everything you have in those key value pairs you can go and operate on in these subscription filters. So what we see people do is they put a lot of the data just into those properties so that they can use them, but it's also making for a simpler programming model. I have on my blog a little snippet article, I almost don't want to call it a post, called NHTTP, where I'm advocating almost seriously that you should, if you use HTTP, just don't send any entity bodies. Don't use any entities. Just put all the data into the headers, because HTTP allows you to do arbitrary extensibility in the headers. It's explicitly in the model, and you don't need to worry about all those encodings, and you don't need to worry about things like JSON, even if you're sitting on a small device, because every device that can speak HTTP has a parser for those headers already. You don't need to bring an extra parser. You don't need to crack the body of the message. Turns out, Service Bus actually supports that model. Our HTTP protocol, you set those properties by just setting arbitrary HTTP headers. So if you want to set a property foo, you just add an HTTP header that's called foo with a value. And we're turning that into a header here. And we're actually also surfacing it that way. So if you come and get a message from us, the return message that we give you will have the content of the body of the message, but then also the properties show up as HTTP headers. So we're trying to make this as easy as possible, and we like this key value pair mechanism because it's so straightforward. Runtime API choices that we have is we have HTTP, we aspire to have a good RESTful protocol, which is self-referential, so it's giving you, we start with the service registry, which is an Atom feed, and then you can go in and crawl that Atom feed, and you can go and put entities there if you care. And we try to have a reasonably well-structured API around queues for how you get at messages, send messages, et cetera. So all the Node and the Python and the PHP SDKs are all built on the HTTP head. We're going to have AMQP in the future. We've been in a large industry consortium for the last few years standardizing the AMQP protocol, the Advanced Message Queuing Protocol. We're going to have more news on that, more detail on that, probably towards the end of the year. We currently have AMQP in a TAP program, so we have a number of customers who are actually running pretty serious traffic through AMQP on a special deployment of Service Bus. And we have the net messaging binding. If you're using WebCF, you can simply go and use the net messaging binding that's also part of that assembly that you get over NuGet or part of the Windows Azure SDK, Service Bus, Microsoft.ServiceBus.dll. There's the net messaging binding, and that is largely equivalent to the MSMQ binding. And if you didn't know, we also own MSMQ. So that's kind of we're trying to keep those things as similar as we can. And we're expecting that you're going to hear more news around MSMQ and Service Bus and how that interacts also in the near future. And then there's the messaging API, which Abhishek has shown. That's kind of the foundation for all this. The messaging API sits on top of our current protocol, which we call nicknamed SBMP, which is built on the WebCF stack. We're going to rehost that completely on top of AMQP. So AMQP exposed is going to be for Java clients and for C++ clients, and we're actually working with a number of folks in the community to make sure that the clients for Apache Cupid and for all the other things work with our broker and the other way around. And we have our messaging API, which is how we see the world, and that messaging API is sitting on top of our current proprietary protocol stack, and we're going to move that over to AMQP in the near future. What we've also seen is we've done a lot of fixes based on feedback. So we have the new configuration pattern where you can go and put those things now into config. We have new constructors. You can read from the web app and cloud config. And it's very easy now to move things around because now everything is in config and you have all the support for config, cloud-based, and local with this connection string. And so we've done a few things. And the last thing is really, that's a biggie. We have had numerous requests, mostly through the unhappy channels, on certificate revocation calls slowing things down, or certificate revocation calls being just a problem with getting through firewalls because all the ports were open, and then there was a call to the CRL, and that would fail, and therefore things wouldn't work. So we actually disabled that path. That will make your connectivity easier, and it's actually going to reduce the latency from cold as well.
This, again, is a config option, a config knob which you can add to your config, and it will enable this behavior.
Yes. So very quickly, one of the things that I want to show you is managing access control, mostly because people still are running as root, as you were.
Yes.
Right. So when we give you this management key, that's what Abhishek has showed you, you get this key here. Right. It's the default key, and then there's a weird term called default issuer. Yes, that's what it's called. It's one of those things where the security people have won. They have a strange world in their head. Username is an okay name for this. Okay, so it's a username. It's a username owner. Owner is root or administrator. Are you running as root? No. So I'm going to show you very quickly how to go and not run as root, not use service bus as root. So the way you can do this is you can go to the access control service tab if you're logged in, and this is not working if you're a secondary user. And you can go onto each namespace. You will find in that namespace a relying party application that is called Service Bus. And that will be set up. Now, you can go and add rules to that application. And you can go and add ways to add identities, add users, add rights, and all those things. Very complicated if you do it without the portal. So let me just show you a basic overview over that conceptual model of how that's supposed to work. With Service Bus, what you get in terms of access control is you get an overlay that sits in access control that's overlaid over the tree that Service Bus gives you. Service Bus is organized like this tree. So you put your entities, you put your queues kind of into this tree-like structure. You can put them all immediately under the root, or you can go and organize them in an arbitrary depth-sized tree. And then you can go and at any point in the tree, just like in the file system, you can go and start assigning rights. And those rights will inherit two accounts, and those accounts you can make an access control, or you can even federate them in with the access control features. Now, we're not doing a talk about access control, so I'm trying to keep it a little shallow. But what you can do is you can go and now create a user, and you can assign that user rights on a particular branch of that namespace. And then that user could go and assign send rights to a particular branch of the namespace, to an entity, to a queue, to one person, and listen rights to another. So we have three rights, send, listen, and manage. Manage allows you to create and delete things, create, delete queues, topic subscriptions. Send allows you to send to a queue or a topic or send to a relay. Listen allows you to listen with a relay or receive from a topic, receive from a subscription. So what you can build with that is a way to go and give a device a key, a name and a key, and that device can now go and send to a particular queue, and it can receive from a particular subscription, and that's all you give that device. So it can get data for it, and only for that subscription, and it can send a notification into a particular thing. So you can narrow down the rights an individual thing has, and that's something that we have in Service Bus using that overlay for access control that you don't have if you were using, for instance, the storage mechanisms. So to make this simpler, this mechanism, oops, sorry, let me go and switch back. Apologies. I don't want to make you dizzy, but I forgot that I had the slide. We have SBAZ tool. SBAZ tool is a tool that you can download from the samples site for Windows Azure. And you'll also find that in our samples collection. It's called SBAZ tool. It's part of the access control samples. And that's what we're shipping. You're compiling this tool yourself against the latest version of the SDK. But then you can go and make an ID. You can show the IDs, the details that it has, the key. You can delete it. And then you can grant it rights, and you can revoke those rights, and also show what the rights are. So you can go and create that access control very easily. So let me just show you that briefly. So what I can do is, with that tool, I'm going to show you the options. No, I have to change my key. Show options and store options allows you to take these complicated settings and just store them into the tool itself. So now I don't have to specify them again. And I'm going to say SPAZ tool show at the root who has rights, or show at foo who has rights. So they're inherited now by the owner, so the inheritance in there. Now I can go and say SPAZ tool make ID Abhishek Lal. And now I can go and say SPAZ tool grant send to Abhishek Lal on foo. No, it's not going to work.
Denied.
No, wait. Is it true? Show foo. I always get that one wrong. Grant send on foo to Abhishek Lal. I'm an idiot. I wrote this to myself and I can't use it. That's what you get for that. Okay, so now Abhishek has rights. So this manifests now in service in access control. But if I go to the relying party applications, now we actually see, this is what I created. You see on foo, there's now a relying party application. That relying party application now has a checked-in rule set for foo. And that rule set now has a single rule, and that rule is for Abhishek to send. So all this complicated stuff that you need to do in access control, this SPAZ tool does that all for you, so you don't have to worry about all the details here. So SPAZ tool is your way to go and just manage all that access control stuff. We're going to have improvements for the access control story, significant improvements in the near future as well. We're going to be very tight on time here because we have more things. So Abhishek is going to show you what we have in store for Windows 8.
So you already saw a demo of our .NET client SDK, but there is a lot more client platforms which we are targeting. And again, I'm going to start just from windowsazure.com. And what you will notice here is we have several developer centers for different languages. For Service Bus, now you have a .NET SDK, a Node SDK, a Java SDK, as well as a Python SDK. The PHP one, which is missing, will come fairly soon. I'll quickly jump into one of them just to show you how to get it. You can go here. The easiest way could be just to browse the source. This is the source for the Node libraries. And within here, if you go under Services, you'll see all the Service Bus wrappers available to you.
And there's a full how-to on the site. So if you go into the developer centers, under Node.js, you'll find the same how-tos, but then for Node.js, for how to go and send and get data from a queue and topics, etc.
Right. So all the brokered messaging functionality with queues, topics, and subscriptions is available through all these languages.
Yes.
But the one which is not listed there is the one I want to draw your attention to. And you can get it again on GitHub by just going to Windows Azure /Azure SDK for Windows 8. It's not listed on the main site yet because we don't have other languages, other services in there now, but it is available publicly. And right now what you have in there is the Service Bus SDK for that. This is if you're writing Metro applications in all the options for Metro, which is running in Windows runtime, whether you're writing C++, C#, or HTML and JavaScript,
sure.
You'll have those options.
I just want to be time cop.
I understand. What I'm running here is actually a Metro application written in C# and XAML using our managed SDK. What this is a C# library compiled against the .NET profile. And you can see all your different options. I'm going to use touch here. For example, to do topic operations, right from creating a topic to adding a subscription and then sending a message. The code listed here will show you how symmetric it is in terms of simply doing to topic create x async, then subscription add async. On send message, you're doing a topic.send async. All of these operations are very, very intuitive and simple, available on these top-level classes. When I click receive, you'll notice a toast come up. This is all local. We're not sending the toast from the service. I'm just, you know, I pull the message and I show it in a toast in the app right here, as you can notice in this code of show toast. But it shows you how now you can write metro applications to both, you know, save your state, synchronize between machines, and get all that richness right from using this particular SDK. Even advanced operations like peak lock and receive and delete are all supported here. So here it says send any messages. I'm going to send, say, 1, 2, and 3. I just sent all the three shapes. Now you can see I can peak lock all the three messages. Maybe one of them completes, but another one abandons. And again, when I do the next peak lock, you'll see the one which was abandoned received again. So nice, simple demo with all the code which you'll need to write to achieve all these scenarios.
Fantastic support. It's always the big challenge to how do you demo TCP/IP, because ultimately that's what we're doing. And so it's always nice if you have any visualization. So this was a very nice one. So Python, Node.js, so you can go into the developer center and go and grab all the SDKs if you're working on those languages. We're adding more things. And we're adding them natively, so the team which is doing Node.js at Microsoft is actually writing those clients so that we unskilled people don't have to deal with that. Pricing. Very important. Before I get to, I have to race through a bunch of things. We're going to go over by like 3 minutes. Apologies to the rest of the organization. Pricing, very important. What does it cost? 1 cent per 10,000 messages. $1 a million. It's not bad. Fine print. Messages are up to 64K. Cost you 1 message unit. Every 64K block that exceeds that costs you another message unit. So if you send 1 message, and that 1 message is 253 kilobytes, that's going to be 3 messages. My math, no, it's not right. There's going to be 4 messages.
4 messages at that.
Yes, because it's the starting one. 256K is the limit, so you can't send more than 1 byte, so it's going to be 4 messages at most for 1 message, but the message limit is 64K, because typically what we see is that the messages are smaller than that. A relay HTTP request responds 1 message per partial 64K segment. Relay NetTTP, we basically just meter what you use in bandwidth, and then that's the traffic surcharge that we have in there. If you use the hybrid option for NetTCP, as soon as we upgrade it back to the stream that gets you out of the data center, so that direct stream, no charges apply because we have no way of metering them. For each 100 relay hours, we charge you 10 cents. A relay hour is charged for when you have a relay endpoint parked. Now, in the situation that you have this load balancing thing which I showed you, we're going to pay for 1 relay endpoint, even though I have 3 listeners. So as soon as you have a single endpoint, so may that be for eventing or may that be for load balancing, you pay for one of those relay endpoints. But for every hour that you have at least 1 listener nailed up to that endpoint, or for every 100 hours, you're going to pay 10 cents. And then also, you're going to pay the standard Windows Azure data center egress charges on top of that. So the pricing is actually not terrible if you think about how many messages you're typically sending for an application. Futures in 19 seconds. So we're going to be very quick here. Iguazoo is something we presented at Built. Very briefly, I did a 5-minute demo, but people were fairly excited. What we're going to do is we're going to add a thing we call notification topics into Service Bus. Looks like a topic from the front, so same message format goes in. What it comes out as is a push notification into iOS, a push notification into Android, a push notification into Windows 8, push notification into Windows Phone. So it's the new entity type that you will create in the same way. So the delivery model for that is you send a message into a notification topic, like you send a message here into the topic. And then we are managing the targets for you. So we're managing all the subscriptions that the devices make. So we're dealing with them. If you have 10 or 10 million, we'll deal with them. So this is built to scale super high up to, you know, our current limit that we are thinking about is 5 million per notification topic. And we're going to have easy mechanisms to go and even chart that up. And so you walk up on the device, you walk up to your API and get a device ID or you get the UI, and then you pass that to us and you say, my device is an Apple device, and we'll deal with it. The special thing we have is that the client application will completely stay in control of its application experience. You give us a template as you register for how you want, what you want to have pushed. So if you want to have a tile, and you want that tile to be red, and you want that tile to have a particular reference to a particular image, you tell us, and we're going to give that back to you. So model here, the device is going to get its URI, it's going to come to us with a target definition. The target definition is going to give us a mapping between the inbound message, key value pairs, and the tile, or whatever you want to push. And we're going to go and fill this out effectively and send this out. And we're going to do that at the scale of very many millions. So you get complete full customization on a per-device basis with this model, and we're just managing all the broadcasts for you. So if you have, let's say, a weather alert, if you have a news item, if you have any of those things, and you are selling or you're shipping, you know, 50 million copies of that app, and you need to go and send one of those news items out, you send one message, and we're dealing with the 50 million of them. So that's Iguazu. So that's target ship date perspective. We're hoping that we're going to have something to look at towards the end of the year, and that we're going to ship this sometime in the first half of next year for our public availability. If you have a question, come to me later. Service Bus EAI in EDI, if you have questions about that, go to the session on Thursday tomorrow. No, on Thursday. Thursday is not Thursday. Tomorrow. Thursday. Today is Tuesday. Too much party yesterday. 2:45 in N230, Javed Sikander is going to talk about the futures of EDI EAI and BizTalk. And then we've shown the portal, the new portal. Abhishek has said you got to go to the old portal. The reason why that is because we're not in the new portal yet. So in the new portal, we're going to look like this. You're going to have Service Bus namespaces. You're going to have a quick create. You'll be able to create namespaces. You'll be able to create queues and topics and all this from that new, so this is a wireframe which I stole, and you're also going to get the statistics. If you have looked at the new Windows Azure portal, you're going to get statistics on the namespace level, you're going to get statistics on the queue or on the topic level. So we're wiring up all that telemetry, and since we have a lot of stuff, that is taking us a little longer, so that's why we don't have that portal support yet. That's also coming towards also the end of the year, just about. So right now, the portal is in preview. It's not done yet. And we're going to come to the party as soon as we can. So that's what we had. Unfortunately, apologize to the rest of the company. 3 minutes and 55 seconds too late. Sorry for holding you up. And I hope that you like this. If you have questions, don't hesitate to come up here so we can answer them. And thank you for coming.